The promise of America is being squandered. How are we going to restore our nation back to a sensible, citizen-centric government? It's time for populism with a purpose. Welcome to Reimagine America with Joyce Cordy. Joyce is a businesswoman, not a politician. And she's here to offer pragmatic, possible, and post-partisan solutions for the 21st century. Now, your host for Reimagine America, Joyce Cordy.
I'm Joyce Cordy, and you're listening to the Reimagine America Radio Hour. I'm here to inform you, to enable you to make an independent judgment on current events, not to inflame your passions. So on this Thanksgiving Day weekend, let's wax philosophic for just a moment. I thought we should begin by looking back, way back, to 1620. Let's take a moment to read from Bill Bennett's Patriot's Almanac about the Mayflower Compact. In November 1620, after a stormy two-month Atlantic voyage, the Pilgrims reached the coast of what is now Massachusetts. When they realized that they had blown north of the region in which they had contracted to settle, some of the colonists announced that they no longer felt bound by any legal authority and that none had power to command them. The Pilgrim leaders quickly solved that problem with a new contract. On November 21st, as the Mayflower lay at anchor off Cape Cod, the settlers drew up an agreement to live together peacefully. They pledged to enact, constitute, and frame such just and equal laws, ordinances, acts, constitutions, and offices from time to time as shall be thought most meet and convenient for the general good of the colony. After writing out the compact, 41 adult males signed it, and then the signers agreed that John Carver would be their governor. In essence, the Mayflower Compact was an agreement for self-government. It was not a forced bargain among unequals, such as a monarch and his subjects, or a lord and his vassals. Rather, it was a social contract between pioneers with a common purpose. Here was a group of people capable of forging a new society in a new world. In the coming years, as Pilgrim William Bradford wrote, they met and consulted of laws and orders, both for their civil and military government, as the necessity of their condition did require. Throughout the infant American colonies, settlers gained practice in something very rare for that time, something that's really still rare in our time. Government of the people and by the people. We can be thankful for the almost 400 years, and that, by the way, is the end of Bill Bennett's comment. We can be thankful for the almost 400 years of democratic practice in these United States. We must thank the bravest among us who have and who even today sacrifice to allow us to make the choice to live in a democratic society. But we all, that's you and I, both individually and collectively, have an obligation to defend our democracy. Ronald Reagan reminded us in 1964, speaking at the Republican National Convention, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same, or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was like to live in the United States when men were free." It's quite possible that in our present day, that fight must continue in the halls of Congress and at the ballot box. But that's a topic for another day. I'm Joyce Cordy, and you're listening to the Reimagine America Radio Hour. And this morning, We're going to take some time to talk with Dr. Arlen Diamond about a hot topic. Hashtag Me Too. Dr. Diamond has a long and celebrated career in the area of organizational change and transformation. She has a broad experience, including business, education, psychology, marketing, management, economics, and law, that enable her to view a problem like sexual harassment as a multifaceted problem, and that's what it is. That's allowed Arlen to help her clients find practical solutions to both individual instances and systematic harassment. She's a prolific writer with hundreds of articles. She also publishes a monthly newsletter, Diamonds for You, that I regularly read. You can subscribe to the newsletter by going to her website, diamondassociates.net, and Diamond Associates is one word. She's the author of four books, including most recently, Conflict in the Workplace, Causes and Cures. That's what we're going to talk about today. Leading and Managing a Global Workforce, which is also part of the issue. Arlen, thank you for taking the time out of your busy holiday weekend to be with us today.
Oh, delighted, Joyce. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Let's start by taking note that all the 40-plus signatories to the Mayflower Compact, as you noted, I put some emphasis on that, were white men. That doesn't mean that they didn't appreciate their wives and daughters. It just meant they didn't see them as their political equals.
They were property.
And that less than legally equal stigma, that property status, would actually last until the ratification of the 19th Amendment in 1920, a full 300 years later. And I wonder if that has something to do with the epidemic of hashtag Me Too that we're experiencing right now.
Oh, I think so. I think it's got most to do with it, because I think once we separate out some of the silly stuff, like teasing and just silly crude kinds of invitations, and we look really at sexual abuse, it's bullying behavior. It's taking advantage of power behavior. It's going after prey that are vulnerable.
So on that point of vulnerability, if we asked our radio audience for a show of hands of women over the age of, let's say, 18, who have not experienced some form of hashtag Me Too, do you think any hands would go up?
Nope, not a one, because I think it's something that happens. Most people are able to brush it off. A lot of it, again, we need to start looking at what we're calling harassment, but a lot of it is fairly mild, and so, we walk away from it. My mother had a friend who, when he had a couple of drinks in him, was handsy, let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
And I learned very early in life to stay arm's length away. Problem solved. You know, it happened a lot.
Yeah, I know. I don't think any of us have been spared. I know some of those people.
I'm a redhead, so you can imagine. It's like
yes,
and a bull or something. Yeah,
and yes, I've been to a lot of cocktail parties where some men, after they've had a couple of drinks, it's kind of like you get to practice your pirouettes.
Right, exactly. Well, one of the things we did in the New York subway, we wore high heels in those days, is if a man stood too close, you take the heel of your shoe and stuck it in his instep. He'd move away really quick.
Ooh, I never thought of that one. But it's past that time. I don't wear anything but kitten heels anymore.
Yeah, I don't even wear them. I'm in flats all the time.
So if we look at the recent epidemic of outings of men who have been preying on women who are in their employ, either directly or indirectly, we see a pattern, don't we, of pot-bellied, older, mainly white men. Is this about power or is it about lust?
I think it's more about power than anything else, frankly. And I hasten to say, this thing that we're looking at now started with Bill Cosby. So it's not restricted only to white men. But basically, I think that it's really important that although there's, you know, all of these coming out right now, to realize it's a very small percentage of men that act like jerks. That, you know, by and large, you, Joyce, and I, we both had really positive interactions with men, both professionally and socially. So there are a handful of jerks, of bullies, of men who get their jollies by making other people uncomfortable. And I think in some of those instances, and I'm not going to name names, I have faces in front of me as I'm thinking, in some of those instances, it's about power and lust. That obviously you have a certain category of man who has a real difficult time having relationships of equality and consequently gets his jollies, if you will, by rather disgusting behavior, taking advantage of people that he's got power over.
And you think that the fact that they're young and nubile has less to do with that than the power?
Well, it's a little bit of both, obviously. I mean, I think it's more about vulnerability than anything else. And I also think most young people are attractive, so in one way or another, it's, you know, it's kind of hard to find somebody that's so unattractive that somebody might not want to play around with them. But I think it's more about, look at what I can do. I'm a big shot, and you want something from me, and therefore you're going to yield to whatever it is I'm suggesting.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back in less than a minute with more of this titillating subject. Hashtag me too.
For more information on today's topic, visit reimagineamerica.org. reimagineamerica.org. Now, back to Reimagine America on 860 AM, The Answer.
And we're back. Hashtag Me Too. What is it? How do we handle it? How do we stop it? And very specifically, what do we do if we experience it? So, Arlen, back to the subject at hand of whether it's power or lust or vulnerability. In the 21st century workplace, much as we like to say that those of us in the private versus public, and in this I'm going to say the fourth estate, media and entertainment, is kind of a category of its own. I mean, the casting couch is as old as probably the second oldest profession in the world. But if we look at the private sector that you and I know, the technology industry, major big, you know, big, what we call Rust Belt industry, et cetera, do you think that we've become more enlightened in your practice? Do you see more, as you've said already, there are some jerks, but are we seeing less of this, especially in technology? Last year, there was a widely reported series of problems at Uber in which women engineers were feeling really seriously and fearfully harassed. And there are always rumors abounding. I know I hear them at lots of parties and at lots of meetings about Google and other tech darlings. What's been your experience with modern, shall we say, industrial factory type America?
So I want to say two things about it that are going to start out sounding contradictory. So on the one hand, the more that women have come into the workplace and in particular gone into occupations that had been historically male, the more the men have resented it, and the more rather atrocious examples of sexual harassment and abuse have come forward. And I can tell you stories of clients that I've worked with that are just ugly things.
Arlen, I could tell you stories of my own experience. Remember that I have worked with and managed really large sales forces,
right?
The last bastion of male supremacy.
That's right. Yeah.
And we beat them.
So there's that. But the other thing is that in the past, it was socially acceptable it might not have been legal, but it was socially acceptable for women to endure a certain amount of abusive behavior. And it wasn't reported. Women were dependent on men economically as well as in other ways, and consequently, whatever was going on in their lives, including abuse within a marriage, went completely unreported. So over the more recent years, we've made, you know, I do sexual harassment training, for example. We've made it more obvious that it should be reported. And so what we're seeing is not more incidents, but more reports of incidents. So I want to say that. I also think that by and large, women have achieved much more parity, both in the workplace and elsewhere in life. And so those opportunities have lessened. Now, does that mean it doesn't exist? Of course it doesn't mean that. There's you know, a certain amount that will happen. But I want to make a distinction, Joyce, which I think some of the media has missed, and that is the difference between teasing, which happens to be something men do all the time, crude invitations, and I certainly, you know, growing up in the Bronx, was subject to my fair share of them, and actual sexual abuse. That there are certain kinds of slangy, ugly, you know, crude things that occur or are said that we need to learn how to just brush off.
Yeah, as a girlfriend and I, who are both, well, we've known each other for quite a long time, and we're both veterans of rising through the ranks in the technology industry. Lots of times, it's boys being boys, and in fact, sometimes they think they're paying you a compliment.
Exactly.
You know, and it's so left-handed that it's really not a compliment. We could give you examples, gentlemen, if you'd like them, but I think we'll, for the moment, we'll spare you.
I have one story I have to tell. So I had been invited to go to San Quentin, and I was walking the yard at San Quentin, surrounded by the head warden and a couple of guards and my guy, who's the attorney that had invited me, Bill. You know, as we were walking the yard, and some of the inmates were out there with weights, and I got some invitations, as you can imagine. And I just smiled and laughed them off and kept walking, and these men looked at me so strangely. But I grew up in the Bronx. I was used to that.
Yeah, well, I remember one early in my career at Intel where I walked to the front of the room and made a presentation about how we were going to go about building the Intel sales force, which was a highly technical sales force.
Mm-hmm.
And so it required some real out-of-the-box thinking in terms of starting with college recruiting. And so I remember one of the regional managers walked up to me after the presentation and said to me, you know, when you walked to the front of the room, I was admiring your great legs. And then all of a sudden I realized I was listening to every word you said. And he meant that as the
wow.
highest
yes.
compliment. But, you know, and yeah, I mean, I do have cowgirl calves. I am, after all, a Berkeley girl. And we'll be back in about 1 minute to continue our conversation with Arlyn about hashtag Me Too.
For more information on today's topic, visit reimagineamerica.org. Reimagineamerica.org. Now, back to Reimagine America on 860 AM, The Answer.
And we're back with the Reimagine America Radio Hour and our guest, Arlyn Diamond of Diamond Associates. Again, her website is diamondassociates.net. And we're talking about hashtag Me Too. And Arlyn, I think it's time to get into the heart and the meat of this problem as it pertains to our listeners. You know, there are... We've talked about the difference between love, lust, power, and you know, boys being boys. But, you know, is it possible that part of what, and you alluded to this, that women are now in what were traditionally male occupations, is some of this behavior driven by intimidation, by, you know, either competing with or being a subordinate to a woman?
Yeah, I think so, Joyce. I mean, when you were talking about them admiring your legs, what I was thinking about, and we went to break at that time, that sometimes the compliment or the seeming compliment is meant to make you uncomfortable. Quite frequently, when women were first put in positions where they were making presentations, and they were obviously, because it was new to them, slightly nervous about it, some man, whether by meaning it teasingly or meaning it obnoxiously, would offer some compliment that actually made them self-conscious, putting them off guard, just deliberately trying to, you know, make their presentation fail. I have worked with women in park service, women in fire service, women in police service, those kinds of areas. And some of the stories they've told about what has happened to them, including having dead animals put in their locker room, having used Kotex pads put in their locker room, those kinds of things. There, you know, there have been deliberate attempts to chase them away. That stopped, by and large, that has stopped, and those are the kinds of things that really were reported. But if you look at what's happening now, women in the military are talking about while they were in the military, some of what happened to them. So it's a hard kind of a thing. Men and women have to live together, and we have to learn how to do that in a way that is not taking unfair advantage of the vulnerability of the female sex. You know what? Also say, although it's a real small percentage, there are men that are abused both by men and women as well.
I was gonna, ask you about that. That, you know, we have to be really careful as we start here to transition. And I will say, as an aside, I get your point, and it actually clarifies for me the behavior that they're trying to push women away. Something that happened to me that we're not going to talk about, but I always wondered what the motive behind it was, and you've just clarified that for me.
Yes, get off our turf.
That was exactly what they were saying. It was a really crude thing. On the other hand, I'm sure that if the person who made that comment to me as I started that that presentation would have thrown me off. But the fact that he waited till after, and I will tell you, he and I and his wife became really good friends, and remain really good friends.
Yeah,
so it was intended. It was really intended as a compliment. It just, the way it came out.
Sometimes it's just compliment.
But you know, that takes us to a really important point between understanding that you're being harassed, as I've just realized these years past, that what the intent of an act was. How does a woman, how do you distinguish between the intent to hurt or harass and simply boorish behavior, boys being boys? And this, before you answer that question, I'm Joyce Cordy, and this is Reimagine America, and Arlen Diamond and I are talking about hashtag Me Too and what do we do about it. Now, Anne, you can answer.
Okay, now answer your question. I think that it's sometimes difficult. But I also think that, and this is one of the things I fear about what's happening right now in the hashtag Me Too, that every slight tiny bit of behavior is going to be misinterpreted now as harassment. And I have been warning people. I've done a number of radio interviews over the last couple of weeks, Joyce, and I've been warning people that this is not a time for men to compliment women on anything other than their work, for example. No touching except to shake hands, et cetera, et cetera. But we have to, as women, I'm going to be stereotypical here, we have to, as women, not take everything to its worst extreme. That we have to look at teasing as something that boys do, men do. You notice they tease children, they tease puppies, they tease kittens, you know, men tease. And we need to be able to take teasing in stride. Teasing is not touching, you know?
Uh-huh.
And draw our lines. I don't appreciate that. Please don't do that. I think as a woman stands tall and basically in a fairly good-natured way says, you know, please don't do that around me, those things get respected. And I can tell you stories of I'm Jewish, and when I first started working in this area in Silicon Valley, having some really guys in the warehouse, you know, making really crude comments, and I asked them to stop. I said, "I'm Jewish. You don't know what these hurt." And they did stop. And I worked there for a couple of years, you know. So, being able in a way that's not attacking the other person, explaining why it's uncomfortable, I think is a big important piece. Not putting yourself in a position where it can happen more than once. I mean, some of the cases that are coming out now are cases where, well, I went to his hotel room and he raped me, and then 2 years later I went to his hotel room and he raped me. What a surprise! You know, as kids from the Bronx learned that if you saw a bunch of boys you didn't know down the street, you crossed the street. You didn't, you know, confront them directly. So as women, we need to take more responsibility for basically saying stop. The other thing I think that's critically important and the most positive thing that I think is coming out of the hashtag MeToo is report abusive behavior. Make it stop. Don't hide from it. And I think that these young girls that have been abused by sports coaches and doctors and people like that, they now know they can come forward, which I think is just a wonderful thing that's coming out right now. When I was a teenager, one of my friends was sexually abused by her priest. And when she told her parents about it, they punished her for lying.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we're learning. And that's the good part. Hashtag MeToo has opened up some doors that are, by and large, positive. But it's also opened up the possibility of every minor, tiny little thing suddenly, you know, looming larger. And I think we need to be careful about that.
And I want you to hold that thought about being careful for about 2 minutes while we go to commercial break.
Okay.
And we'll be back with some concluding comments about hashtag MeToo in just a moment.
For more information on today's topic, visit reimagineamerica.org. reimagineamerica.org. Now, back to Reimagine America on 860 AM, The Answer.
And we're back with Arlene Diamond and of Diamond Associates at diamondassociates.net. And we're going to ask, I'm going to ask just a couple more questions to close up this topic, hashtag me too. And one of those is, you know, as I said, a couple of my girlfriends and I were talking about this the other night. And one of the things that we recognize is that some things happened in our careers, which, you know, at the time we attributed to boys being boys or whatever. And we kind of went on because we knew that while it's important to say something, as you pointed out, Arlen, we didn't want to make a big case out of it because we knew it would be career limiting for us if we did that. So that's one of the things. Even Leanne Tweden in her comments about Al Franken said that her immediate reaction when she saw the photos in 2006 was that she was afraid if she came forward that it would jeopardize her, you know, fledgling career at Fox Sports. So how does a woman navigate that? Boys being boys versus, you know, saying something versus making a scene and possibly limiting her own, you know, future employment opportunities.
So I want to say a couple of things about it. One, I think one of the good things about what's happening right now is women are learning they can come forward. So that's kind of a bottom line. But the other part is it's not necessarily the complaining that sexual harassment or abuse happens so much as this feeling of women not being able to take care of themselves. That, again, to be stereotypical, you know, men will really go to management and say so-and-so hurt my feelings or so-and-so touched me inappropriately. You know, they probably punch him out or something. So part of it, and Joyce, certainly you learned how to do this early in life, and so did I, is we learned how to take care of ourselves and to make sure it didn't happen again. So you know, there's that piece, is stand strong. Know what you're worth. Know that no one has the right to take advantage of you. Eleanor Roosevelt said, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. And so we need to stand strong. That's number one. Number two, we're now really making it possible for women to come forward and not get punished for coming forward. But there was another piece, too, and that is who did we go to? So, you know, if a guy in your department abused you sexually, whether it was quid pro quo or creating the, you know, this hostile work environment, if you went to his boss and he were buddies. So who do you complain to becomes another part of this whole equation. I'm just finishing a book, Joyce. So my first draft is at my editor, on how to do neutral investigations in the workplace of the he said, she said kinds of accusations. And it's not only important to do a neutral investigation, but who's assigned to do the investigation so that it does stay neutral. But there's another piece to it, and people are going to attack me for this following statement, and I'm not blaming the victim. But the other piece to it is, if in your mind, this is how you're the casting couch, if in your mind, this is how you're going to get the job, and it's more important to you to get that job than it is to however you're going to feel after the favor that's being demanded of you, that's been your choice. No one, you know, tied you up and put you in that situation. So I think we need to also take responsibility for the choices we make and the excuses that we make around them.
I think that's true. I hearken back to, I am sure that many of the women who have complained about Donald Trump are 100% accurate by his own admission on tape, right? But the one instance where that woman said he was sitting on a bar stool next to her in a bar in New York and put his hand up her skirt, let me tell you that no man would do that to me. And you all, and Arlen and I actually know each other, so she knows how, you know, the petite extra small, trust me, there is no way that a man's hand would be underneath my skirt, and I would not be standing, slapping, you know, after I said,
and walked away.
Yeah, I would have gotten up from the bar stool, said whatever, and walked away. I wouldn't have sat there long enough for the guy to get the opportunity to do that. And I think women have to take responsibility for that. You don't have to submit to, and on the other hand, I have millennial male friends, or they're children of my friends, who are very successful young men who, when they go out, you know, as the boys will go out and they meet girls and they talk to girls, they will not buy a girl a drink for fear that at some point it's going to come back and bite them in the backside. You know, so I think there's a sensitivity that we need to deal with. And before you answer that question, I'm Joyce Cordy. You're listening to the Reimagine America Radio Hour, and my guest Arlen Diamond and I are talking about #MeToo. And the last question, how do you file a complaint in the workplace? And what should an employer do? And that's the subject of your forthcoming book. But
it is.
Briefly, can you give us an idea so that if there are women listening or men listening who need to take action in their own defense, they know what they should do tomorrow morning?
Generally speaking, you'd file your complaint with the Human Resources Department. But if for whatever the reason that feels uncomfortable to you, go as high up in the organization as you can that's not a direct line up from your department. And I think given what's happening right now, in most cases, you will be well received. When you file your complaint, you know, date, time, event, and hopefully that there are potential witnesses. And then it's up to the employer to do a thorough investigation. Now, here's the thing. We don't want to disbelieve the person making the complaint, but there's also a huge tendency for people to believe anyone that makes a complaint. First one in gets, you know, gets to be believed. And sometimes there are false complaints that happen. So I think the employer's role is to be neutral. And for the person making the complaint, please don't assume that that neutrality means you're not being believed. It means they're being fair about it, and it's, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But the more information you can give, the easier it is to confirm the activities that you're alleging. Don't be afraid to make the complaint. Just think about who it is that you need to make the complaint to, and do it accordingly.
And do it in a timely fashion.
Oh, yes. Thank you for that. Yes. One of the things that's happening now is 30 or 40 years later, there's no way to prove or disprove.
Quickly
do it.
I think that's true. Well, Arlen, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your experience with the Reimagine America radio audience. And if some of you out there listening think that your organization might be able to benefit from some proactive sexual harassment training or have current or future instances that require investigation, you can reach Dr. Diamond at diamondassociates.net. And
thank
we'll be back in just a moment with a few closing thoughts. Thank you, Arlen.
Thanks. That was great.
For more information on today's topic, visit reimagineamerica.org. reimagineamerica.org. Now, back to Reimagine America on 860 AM, The Answer.
And there was some more hashtag MeToo in the news this week. Turns out that Texas Republican Congressman Joe Barton took some nude photos of himself and sent them to at least one, maybe more than one, so-called consensual sexual partners during a period when he was separated from his second wife and had not yet met his third wife. Hey, I've seen his balding, white-haired, pudgy face. Trust me, I do not want to see more. But why would someone, now several years later, why would someone want to publish those photos on the internet? And does that behavior constitute some kind of harassment? And then there's 88-year-old Democrat John Conyers of Michigan, whose office has admitted that it paid out $27,000 recently to make a claim go away, while proclaiming that the congressman did nothing wrong. $27,000 for doing nothing wrong. And by the way, the $27,000 did not come from the Congressional Office of Compliance slush fund, but from Conyers' own office budget. You know what? That is also taxpayer money. And now there are three more allegations, because you know what? There's not only substance there, there's money there. So what did we learn from Jackie Spears and some other members of Congress, Mrs. Dingell, for example? We learned that $18 million in taxpayer money have been paid out by the Office of Compliance, the Congressional Office of Compliance, in a period spanning perhaps the last 10 years. So here's what I think. If we taxpayers paid those bills, then every claim should be a public record. No confidentiality agreements for either the complainant, or maybe there should be some confidentiality for the complainant, but the complainer gets none. We have an absolute right to know who was either elected or appointed or a civil service servant, who did what to whom. A bill that mandates sexual harassment training for everyone who works on Capitol Hill is expected to pass Congress with a voice vote this week. But until we, the people, see what has actually happened on Capitol Hill, seeing where our $18 million went, it's just lipstick on that pig. It's only in understanding what has been tolerated and hushed up that members of Congress can craft legislation and new rules that address the behavior going forward. And it's up to you and me. It's up to each of us to contact our representative and senators and demand the details of where, when, and how our $18 million was spent. And to help that, you will find at the end of this, of the podcast version on reimagineamerica.org, a link to the list of all congressional representatives so that you can contact your representative and say, it's my right to know $18 million of my money was spent hushing up bad behavior. It's my right to know. And I want to give you a preview of next week. My guest will be Pamela Donnelly, who is the CEO of Gate College System. It's an online business that helps prepare students for the college admissions process and testing. She's the author of several best-selling books, most recently, Four Keys to Getting Your Child into College. I know you'll want to hear about that. But we'll be discussing her methodology, and we will also be talking about her newly formed nonprofit that is aimed at helping high schoolers from underserved communities get into and stay in the college of their choice. It's about her giving back to help equalize the playing field with some help from listeners like you. I'm sure you'll want to hear her timely and insightful advice for all teens and their parents. In the meantime, if you want to learn more about some of the topics that we've discussed today or listen to a podcast of this program, go to reimagineamerica.org. I do try to respond to as many listener comments as possible, and you can reach me at reimagine-america on Facebook and also at Joyce Cordy, one word, all small letters, on Twitter. Now, the caveat is, if you call me horrible, I don't answer you. You can disagree with me without being disagreeable, okay? Think of it as a conversation. Reimagine America. Reimagine America is independent and nonprofit. If you appreciate our independent, results-oriented, post-political voice, please consider making a small donation at reimagineamerica.org. And until next Sunday, thanks for your time and your interest.
This has been Reimagine America with Joyce Cordy. Go to www.reimagineamerica.org. Join the forum, donate, tell others, and sign up to receive future podcasts. That's reimagineamerica.org. Together, we can reimagine America.